Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're starting the show today by talking about DACA. DACA is a policy that protects young immigrants known as Dreamers who were brought to the U.S. by their parents illegally. There's a new support system called the Center for Dreamers, which opened at UW-Madison in October, and we'll certainly talk about that as well. We have the creators on the show, by the way, Aaron Barbato, clinical professor and director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW-Madison Law School. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
It's great that you're here. And joining us a little bit later will be Erica Rosales. She is director of the Center for Dreamers at UW-Madison. We'll certainly look forward to hearing from her as well. So as we talk with these two guests, I hope you'll join in. What do you want to know about the Center for Dreamers? Are you an immigrant who came to the U.S. maybe as a child? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@WPR.org. Aaron, I want to maybe first talk about your work at the southern border of the U.S. You could talk about your experiences and how you've helped people.
Sure. So through the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School, I teach law students how to practice immigration law. And part of that is work that we do in experiential learning trips. So every year we will travel often to the southern border to work with people, women and children that are detained in the U.S. Or this past summer we went to Fort Bliss, where undocumented children that came unaccompanied by parents were detained at a military base there. And also we've worked in Tijuana with people that have been forced to remain in Mexico during the pendency of their asylum process or during Title 42, which has blocked asylum seekers from coming to the United States. And then this summer, we're actually going to take our first trip to Europe to work with people seeking refuge in Germany from Ukraine and Afghanistan.
So it sounds like, a wonderful might not be the right term, a great experience for students and certainly a wonderful experience for those who you're working with. What kind of conditions do immigrants experience while they're at the border waiting? What have you seen?
You know, it's actually pretty shocking. While I've been there a number of times, I'm not there on a daily basis like many of the people that work for nonprofits supporting the immigrants on a daily basis. But every time we go, you know, we work with people that I believe often have very strong claims for asylum in the U.S., but are unable to access that asylum system due to certain policies or access to information. So when we're down there, we're hoping to provide access to justice and some sense of due process to the people that should want to seek protection under our laws, but aren't able to do so at all times because of certain situations. So it's really difficult for the students to see often, but they also learn the power of a law degree and how it can be used to provide humanitarian relief to those that are in need.
Yeah, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking, when you mentioned proof, I thought, oh my goodness, how difficult must it be for an immigrant or prospective immigrant to prove that, you know, they would be in danger if they weren't accepted?
No, exactly. And I mean, and that's what I think a lot of people are actually starting to understand more, Larry, because of what we're seeing in Ukraine and recently in Afghanistan, where the media has really been able to demonstrate that people have to leave in this emergent situation. So they're not taking pictures or grabbing all of their documents that is often needed to prove that they will be persecuted if returned to their home country. So these are people that are truly in emergency situations, and they can't think about what does a judge want to see when I arrive in the United States. But I think as the world and people in our country learn more about the journey of someone seeking refuge, the more that people will have access to protections here in the United States and other developed countries.
Yeah. Undocumented immigrants who come to the U.S., of course, they can seek the DACA program, and Maybe you could talk more about who qualifies for this kind of status.
Sure. So DACA was created in 2012 by through executive order from President Obama, and it doesn't allow people that are recently arriving in the United States. You had to arrive in the United States by 2007. So it's a limited number of people that are eligible through this program. But the program has really high standards. In order to be eligible, you had to have entered the United States before your 16th birthday, have graduated from high school, or obtain a GED. And you basically have to have shown that you're a perfect human being. You could have not had any issues with law enforcement, and demonstrate that you warrant favorable discretion from our government in order to not have a pathway to citizenship, but have a work permit that allows you to remain in the United States without fear of deportation for a 2-year period. But during those 2 years, before those 2 years expire, you have to renew the work permit, which is about $500 to do every 2 years. And it provides you some protection from deportation, but it is not an independent pathway to citizenship. So a lot of the people, they live in somewhat of a limbo, but a lot of them have been here for a long time. And we'll hear from Erika in a bit, who has really established a life here over a long period of time, but doesn't have a pathway to citizenship, and also doesn't know when the DACA program may end or whether it will continue indefinitely.
Man, it's got to be a crazy way to live sometimes for those folks. And every 2 years, they need to be reapplying. But if you're 9 years old, would that work? Yeah, you could be.
No, yeah, you have to be at least 16 years old to apply.
Okay.
So, right. So it's a very limited amount of people that are eligible, and eventually nobody will be eligible because once, 16 years pass, there won't be people that are eligible to apply. So it's still this limited amount of people, but there's still no independent pathway to citizenship, which everybody in this program generally has been waiting for. But Congress has to act in order for that to happen.
Talking right now with Aaron Barbato, the clinical professor and director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW-Madison Law School. Questions for her? I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Aaron, where does DACA stand in Wisconsin in reference to immigration laws?
So the DACA program is a federal law. So it stands the same as it does in all the states. But right now, people are only allowed to reapply for DACA. We talked about that if DACA was open to all people that qualified, there would be about 11,000 people eligible in Wisconsin. But right now, new applicants are not eligible to apply based on a federal court ruling. And we're still waiting for additional movement on that case that hopefully it will allow new applicants to apply. But right now, there are about between 6,000 and 7,000 people in Wisconsin that do have DACA, and they're eligible to continue to apply. The things that differ in Wisconsin for DACA are what benefits or are eligible for people with DACA, and that differs by state. And Wisconsin doesn't have many additional public benefits for people with DACA, including in-state tuition, which is one of the reasons why we opened the Center for Dreamers.
We'll give our listeners a chance to join in. Again, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you'd like, you could email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And DACA, these folks are different from those immigrants who come and work in farms and so forth through different times of the year, for sure.
So, I mean, generally, someone with DACA came as a child, and that and some of the people with DACA certainly work in our agricultural business. Our dairy industry, very much in Wisconsin, is supported by undocumented individuals as well as documented individuals that have come from other states. But DACA recipients do have the have authorization to work in the United States for that 2-year period of their work permit. So they have more options in accessing employment than someone who is fully undocumented.
Let's take a call. Jerry in La Crosse, we'll give you a chance. Jerry, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a question. I understand many of these immigrants come from countries other than Mexico or Canada, and they have multiple countries between their home where they're at danger and the USA. And I wonder why they can't find safe harbor in some of these countries between their home and the USA. I suspect that a lot of them are really partially economic immigrants.
Jerry, thank you. A comment on that, Aaron?
Sure. Thanks, Jerry, for the question. I think that's a really important question and something that is misunderstood in a lot of ways. So a lot of the people that are seeking asylum on our southern border, and this is really different than our DACA population, they do often travel through a number of countries to reach our southern border. But some of the dangers that they are fleeing will also be a danger in other countries, especially from Central America, where many people are fleeing the gangs that basically act as controlling governments in some of the areas. So that danger persists throughout, but also people can seek asylum on our southern border, and they know that. So they will make their way up to our southern border to see if they will qualify while passing through other countries that where dangers still persist, or and if it's not specific danger that's the same in their home country, it's a different danger in a country, maybe based on the color of their skin or their religion.
Hmm. Jerry, thanks. Good question. Appreciate your call. Again, you can join in 800-642-1234. Email us to ideas@wpr.org. Erica Rosales will be joining us in fact, she's joining us very quickly, but just a reminder, Courtney Everett, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at the federal DACA program and the Wisconsin Dreamers Center with Aaron Barbato, who is a clinical professor and director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at UW-Madison Law School. She's been visiting with us, but joining us now is Erica Rosales, who is director of the Center for Dreamers at UW-Madison. She also works at the Wisconsin Center for Education Research as a diversity and inclusion specialist. Erica, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Larry. Thank you so much for the invitation. It's an honor to be here.
Well, you know, as I said, you're director of the Center for Dreamers at UW-Madison. And maybe first of all, tell us how this center came to be.
Oh, boy. I know. Aaron said I'm here on the call, and it's been such a journey. So Aaron and I, with our minds put together, put together a grant proposal for the Baldwin Idea Endowment Foundation. And I don't think that at first when Aaron and I put it together, we didn't really think we were going to get the funding. But we knew that there was a very high need for services for DACA and undocumented students. That there is, even now with the center, that there's still a very high need on a lot of different levels, but especially when it comes to higher education. And so we put this grant proposal together, and we received a lot of support from the community, and it turned out that we did receive the grant. The grant is actually for 2 years. We started the work it was October of last year. So we've been in this for a pretty short time. And since it's a grant, it has worked as a project. So we've been building it, and we've been continuing to grow. And I think that the most important part of it all is the amount of support that we have been receiving, which has been really wonderful. And I think it's based off of that need that we all know that is there for DACA recipients and undocumented students.
Yeah, and Erica, you Aaron mentioned you have a personal connection to the center. You're a dreamer. Share with us when you came to Wisconsin, what that was like.
Sure. Yeah, that is correct. I'm a DACA recipient myself. I have been in the States for the past, oh my goodness, since 1995. So I am one of the older, I would say, DACA recipients here, or probably as a whole in the whole pool of DACA recipients. So I've been here since 95, and I actually moved straight to Madison from Mexico. It was definitely a cultural shock, especially as a teenager. However, unlike a lot of other DACA recipients who moved here when they were very young, the majority moved here at a very young age, to the point that oftentimes they don't remember, you know, back home. They might not remember. They might not have those specific memories. I think I was very fortunate to have that. I had my childhood in my very small town in Mexico, and I have those memories. So I think that's very special for me. And at the same time, that there's also, you know, that loss when you have to leave your country for better opportunities. And I have been very aware that I have been undocumented the whole time I've been here. When DACA came around, it's been such a blessing, even though DACA does not mean a pathway to citizenship. It does not mean that I am documented. It does not mean that I have a green card. It does not mean any of that. With DACA, I am able to have privileges that without it, I wouldn't, such as a driver's license, a social security number, a work authorization, and then with advanced parole, the ability to leave the country under certain circumstances, of course, but that possibility is there, which is, it's really wonderful, especially knowing that it provides so much. And with DACA, you have to renew this every 2 years.
Yeah.
Yet at the same time, you know, it's something that is there. And it's been a journey, that's for sure. You know, it's definitely been my own journey, but I'm happy that I'm at a point where I can support others that have a similar story than I do, because hopefully on their end they feel more understood, they feel like they can trust somebody, and that they can go to a center with someone who understands their story. So I think that's a pretty big part of my job.
Yeah. And Aaron, maybe you can expand on the type of support the center offers dreamers.
Sure. So I often say, people say, what is the center? And I say, it's Erica, because, you know, Erica is able to provide a safe place for people to go for information and services that they need. And over the years that I've been working at UW prior to the center, you know, the Immigrant Justice Clinic has fielded many questions and situations for our students that are undocumented and undocumented. But I was never in a position to really provide them with the holistic approach that they need. I can help with legal issues, and that's really what I can do. But I knew that there was such a greater need, and to have a need of someone that people can look to and know that they understand their situation much more than someone who is not similarly situated. And so when Erica and I came together to build the center, we wanted to provide a holistic approach. And so we have the legal clinic, and then Erica runs the other portion, which would be educational, career, and mental health services or social services. So if someone comes in to meet with me because they need to renew their DACA or have a question about other legal issues regarding their immigration, then we can do an entire intake and determine whether there's other ways we can help serve them to ensure that they have access to their career, their education, and mental health services where they otherwise would not know necessarily where to go.
Yeah. And Erica, do you work with Is it only students from the UW, or is it anyone in the community?
Yeah, no, that's the other thing. I'm really glad that you mentioned that, Larry. We actually serve the entire state, which is a huge undertaking, as you can imagine.
I would think.
But we do serve the entire state. And I think we've been strategic about that as far as our outreach. We definitely, with the capacity, we definitely don't have the capacity to serve everybody. But I think as the word is getting out, we're able to serve people more and more. And then also us receiving more support. So now we have two new interns, and we're starting to take in more volunteers. So that's something that with that, we're going to be able to take more of that on. But yeah, we serve the entire state, and that feels like a really big blessing because Madison is wonderful in regards to resources. We have a lot of resources in Madison, but that's not the case for a lot of other places in the state, especially rural areas, and especially if folks, you know, don't really have that sense of community. So yeah, we're hopefully able to get to those corners of Wisconsin where otherwise the services are not there.
You know, I was thinking about this in COVID. Certainly nobody wanted COVID, and we'd be glad if we never had it. But one thing it probably did help a lot of people is to get learn how to use Google Meet and all that sort of thing. And I imagine that's a way that you can reach people from other parts of the state.
Definitely. When we first thought about this, and Aaron and I thought about, oh, how are we going to do this in person? And we thought, well, maybe we can start out with having Zoom meetings or doing calls. And we realized that actually that provides more accessibility for folks. And then also maybe a sense of comfort, a level of comfort, because I'm sure that, you know, it can be intimidating speaking with immigration lawyers or people that you don't know, and you have to share this story with them and ask vulnerable questions. So it seems to provide a better sense of comfort as well as accessibility.
Yeah, just the fact you can look at someone, even though it's on a screen. You can, you know, see the, I'm sure, in both of your eyes, the concern and the willingness to be helpful to the people. And I got to believe that is helpful for sure.
Absolutely.
Is the Center for, I mean, do you already have to be part of DACA or just individuals who are undocumented?
Can you ask the question again? I'm sorry, Larry.
Oh, is the center for people who are already part of DACA or individuals who are undocumented?
Go ahead, Aaron. I believe you're going to.
Yeah, okay, Aaron, yeah. Go ahead.
So we generally focus on people that have DACA. That's, you know, what we are specializing in, but we will also offer services to other people that are similarly situated. So students that are undocumented that have questions about whether they can access higher education. There's just a little bit of a difference in terms of what people who are undocumented are eligible for and what people who are documented are eligible for. So we will never turn someone away because they're undocumented. Our focus is a little bit more on the documented community, but we hope to serve everybody because, you know, as I said, there's going to be that sunset date for DACA as well, where eventually nobody with DACA will be accessing higher education. And so we would like those services to continue with the undocumented population as well until there aren't any undocumented students and everybody has a pathway to citizenship. So we really want to provide services to anybody that has questions about accessing education and have equity in that process.
So, Aaron, when someone, I was going to ask the process about when someone reaches out to the center, but maybe first, how do they find out about the center?
So ADCA put together a beautiful website that's available. So I think people have found it through there. But we also have connections with a lot of community organizations throughout the state and high schools as well. So if someone comes in to speak with their high school counselor and has questions about attending UW-Madison or UW-Milwaukee and wants to know about financial aid or whether they're even eligible to apply, their high school counselor can say, hey, why don't you contact the Center for Dreamers at UW? It's a safe place, confidential, and they can provide you access to the information you need or connect you with the people that will provide you the information that you need. So it's generally right now kind of word of mouth or people find out about it on our website.
Yeah, and we do have a link to that. Courtney reminded me that we have a link to the website on at WPR.org/Larry. Just go to today's date if you didn't get that down, or if you want to go to it later, it's certainly there for you. And so a lot of virtual meetings, but when somebody reaches out, what's the process they go through to find the necessary help? Or is there some process?
Yeah, so there's usually different ways. So we have the legal clinics, which have been happening once a month. So a lot of the times it's folks reaching out and scheduling a legal clinic appointment. The other way is a lot of the times they contact us directly, so via our email, or sometimes they contact me directly, or they go on our website and then they can submit a request for more information or for a conversation. And it's usually I'm the person that will contact folks, whether they have reached either our email for the Center for Dreamers or my own personal email, or if they have reached out to us via the website. So it kind of all kind of funnels down to me.
yeah. It's the center is Erica. But I would also add that we serve students or people trying to access higher education, but we also want to serve educators, administrators, faculty, mm-hmm. staff that are working at universities and also high schools and colleges to ensure that they have the knowledge they need when someone asks them a question about whether they're eligible to apply or what should I do with this student who has DACA and they're applying for their internship. I'm not sure they're eligible to work at this internship. So we understand that these issues are incredibly complicated. And the best thing to do is to learn the information about it. And so that mm-hmm. if someone contacts a school and says, you know, I want to apply for this program, whether it's law school or medical school, those administrators can contact us for the information before giving someone incorrect information or the runaround.
Yeah.
So we just want to make the policies and information available so that the entire system works more smoothly and equitable.
Let's take your call and get some listeners involved. Nancy in Duluth, Minnesota, will go to you. Hi, Nancy. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for having a show like this. I so appreciate it. I'm calling because I lived in Nuevo Mexico, New Mexico, and worked with Hispanics, both local and immigrants, for many, many years through religious work and then teaching. And I have great respect for them, and my heart just breaks every time I hear the immigration story, the lack of the way people are treated at the border. I did a border ministry trip right before the lockdown in 2019, and I was just heartbroken at what these wonderful, hardworking families, and we were mostly dealing with families. There's hardly any guys around. It was women and children and how they're treated.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that a lot of people don't have that compassion, and there's a lot of negative, very negative and inaccurate information about the southern border immigrants. But I don't hear anybody talking about the demographics of the United States and how we are going to be severely affected by the fact that we don't we're so limited in allowing any immigration, not just the southern border, but the companies have been crying about this for years and nobody's listening to let more immigrants in. I'm an elder myself, and they're saying we are an aging country, not a young country anymore. Japan is in the same position. There's not going to be enough people to take care of us.
Well, you can chuckle a little bit about that, but there's certainly some truth to that, Erica. Or Aaron. Erin, maybe.
Yeah,
Erin.
No, thank you for the comment and thank you for the work that you do. And I think what you bring up very much is the, I think, lack of understanding of the process for many people. That, you know, you often hear in immigration, people say, just get in line. There often isn't a line for people to get in, but there's a need for people in the United States, but and also to have, like, humanitarian lens towards what the, you know, the United States has always been a leader in humanitarian rights in many ways, especially for offering people refuge. But I do believe, you know, I've lived in Wisconsin most of my life, that Wisconsin can be a place that is very welcoming and knowledgeable about our neighbors that are have joined us before or are joining us now. And one of the parts of creating the Center for Dreamers was really ensuring that Wisconsin has that resource, because I do think the people of Wisconsin are good people and want to have good policies and procedures to welcome our neighbors and serve our DACA and undocumented students and people.
And Nancy, thanks again. You could join in too, 800-642-1234 with your questions. How long does it take to receive DACA benefits, by the way? Erin, do you know?
Sure. So, and Erica can probably talk about her journey as
sure.
well, but there, it's been different, and it's different under every administration. So under Obama, there was a different timeline. Under President Trump, there were a lot of cancellations, and times people were not eligible to renew, or if they did renew, they would take longer to process, and people often fell out of eligibility to work because their work authorizations expired because the processing time was so long. Thankfully now, and I was just telling Erica this last week, when someone applies for a renewal, they're getting their renewals within about a month, which is the way it should be, so that there's no fear of someone losing their job because of processing times through our immigration system. So right now, it's a quick renewal, but that's not always the case and something that we always keep an eye on, because someone with DACA losing their ability to work has detrimental effects on their life, but also the lives of their, you know, their children as well, and their your partners and family.
Yeah. Well, and maybe, Erica, you can talk a little about your experience.
Yeah, that timeline has always been nerve-wracking, as Erin already mentioned, because it has changed so much, especially during the Trump administration. Just being undocumented as a whole was, it always is, but it's, especially during that time, it was extremely nerve-wracking every single day. And that timeline would shift, and there was a time, I believe, that the renewal went from, I believe originally it was 3 years, and it went to 2 years, and then during the Trump administration, it went to 1 year, then it went back to two. So when I renew now, I have my DACA for 2 years. But at the same time, there's also a time frame when you can actually submit your renewal. So, and then you also have to be mindful that once you get it approved, you don't get it approved when your renewal date ends. You get it approved that day, and that's when it restarts all over again. So even if they receive your documentation and they approve it 3 months prior to the actual end date, then you kind of lose out on those months. And over time, you lose out. I mean, at this point, I've probably lost out on like a year when you combine it. And then you also have to think of the expenses. You have to apply for, you have to pay for the actual application. And then you also have to pay for an attorney if you want to go with an attorney as well. And it ends up being, I would say approximately $1,500 total if you go with an attorney, which is a pretty big sum if you are doing this every year, especially if you're a student and if you, you know, are of low income. And so just even us providing that service of providing, having the consultations and the actual processing the actual application, that is a huge financial help. And then also here in Madison, there's a lot of other support, but I think that, you know, just having that on its own provides a lot of relief for folks.
Let's take another call. Joe and Randolph will give you a chance.
Yeah. These coyotes make a lot of money, and that's not right, you know, and they're raping the people, and the government, we don't have money.
Well, I'm not sure what you're getting at there, Joe, but
I can talk a little bit about the coyotes, I think, what he's, you know, referring to. And as Title 42 is dropped in May, we're going to see probably more immigration, possibly more immigration to our southern border. But one thing to highlight is there is a lot of criminal activity in the transfer of people. And I think, the government, while we may not have a lot of funding for things like this, protecting humans is really important, and the trafficking of humans is a huge problem on our southern border. And oftentimes it's not the people that are seeking refuge or seeking to come to the United States, but it's people that are in these criminal groups of coyotes who traffic people into the United States. So it's something that everyone should be aware of, because they even encourage people to come to the United States and will spread false information to encourage people to come so they can make more money.
Someone also wondered, what if a DACA participant marries a U.S. citizen? How does that affect their pathway to citizenship?
That's a really good question, Larry, and that's one of the areas that the Center for Dreamers tries to focus on, because, you know, Erika and I always talk about how can we get someone with DACA on a pathway to citizenship. They've been waiting for Congress to act for so many years, and it doesn't seem like it's gonna happen. So there may be a way for someone with DACA to have a pathway to citizenship through a different manner, and that may be through marriage to a U.S. citizen. That doesn't mean it's an easy process, but they may be eligible to get their green card in that manner, or through an employment-based visa. But that generally requires a very high level of education and experience. And so, but if we meet someone who may be eligible for one of those pathways to citizenship, we want to ensure that they have the best opportunity possible to have that pathway to citizenship, because they've been in the United States so long. This is their home. And if we can help them do that, we really hope to do so.
How many people are you working with right now in the center? Do you know offhand, Aaron or Erica? Erica, maybe you know.
Sure. So we've been accumulating information about how many people were, quote unquote, getting in the door. I would say that on average, as far as the legal clinics, we have about 10 people or so from each legal clinic. But then we also have folks contacting us on a regular basis. And then we also provide presentations. So it's a little bit hard to gauge just because of that. For example, right before this conversation, I gave a presentation yesterday. I met with students for another presentation. And then from those conversations, usually the folks reach out to me again, or then they share the information. So right now I wouldn't have the exact numbers, but I would say that is obviously, of course, with more dissemination, that's continuously growing. And actually, would I have time to make a comment about the coyotes or the smugglers?
Okay, that may be a minute.
So I just wanted to say that, you know, I mean, of course, that coming to the United States as an undocumented person and crossing the border without inspection is not ideal for everyone. At the same time, the smugglers, I wouldn't say that they're all quote unquote criminals, because some of us, like myself, I needed somebody to bring me to the United States. And it was actually somebody who was very trusted by my family. And I think that there's also that misconception of if somebody's a smuggler, then they must be doing something bad. But oftentimes they're protecting people in certain ways when they're crossing the border. From even just the harshness of the weather or actual criminals. And ideally, we would all have a way to come with documentation, but that is extremely complicated. As far as my own story, I know that we tried in several ways, and that was the last resort. And I'm very grateful that we had a smuggler that was, you know, very mindful of our situation, especially me being a child. I was a child at that time, as well as my sister. But that doesn't necessarily mean that these people are automatically criminals, that they want to or that they do criminal acts.
Well, you're doing some wonderful work here in Wisconsin, both of you, Aaron and Erica, and I want to thank you so much. And Again, we've posted your website at WPR.org/Larry. Our listeners know how to get there. Is go to today's date. Thank you both so much for being with us. Well, I hope we have a chance to talk again. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
It's been a pleasure.
Erin Barbato is a clinical professor and director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW-Madison Law School. And Erica Rosales is director of the Center for Dreamers at the UW-Madison. Great to have them with us. And great to have our next guest. I've been looking forward to talking with Rita Dove for quite some time now. And it will be coming up next. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.